morning, hello in the TV land.
Hey.
We're here, we had some hold up with apparently jury trials and other traffic at our security checkpoint. So that's why we're getting started a little late, but people are filing in and our speaker is here. He's Kevin Sullivan. He's Assistant City Attorney for the City of Milwaukee. He's done an outline which is available on the website. There are copies in the back. In order to get your CLE credit, drop Paul an email or give her a call out there. The folks here in Milwaukee, of course, can sign in. Quickly, next month, on May 14th, Judge Pepper and Trustee Tom King are going to present on the proposed new model national Chapter 13 plan. So please come back for that. In June, we're going to have child support and domestic support obligations by John Pintar and Todd Koenig. So please come on back for that. Thanks again to Kevin for presenting on these issues. Take it away, Kevin.
Thank you, Judge. Good morning.
It's a pleasure to be here. I apologize. We have, of course, security here in the federal building, and I waited in line for 20 minutes, and then when I was second to come through, then the call went out, are there any attorneys in line? You may please come to the front. So timing, obviously, is everything. My purpose this morning is to speak about some of the aspects of Chapter 13 bankruptcy, which involve the City of Milwaukee. I've selected a couple of topics which appear in my outline. For those of you who were up at Kohler for the bankruptcy and insolvency program, the materials look quite similar, and so they are based on those materials. But this isn't so much a repeat of that program, since my recollection of when I presented there was not unlike the reception a lawyer might have received from a particularly aggressive appellate panel. The questions came so quickly that I really didn't have a chance to do anything more than respond, and that's perfectly fine. I'm happy to do that again and encourage you to ask questions, make comments, provide observations. As a public lawyer with the city attorney's office, it seems to me that's one of our obligations is to do that, is to make ourselves available. Whether or not I'm able to answer the question, perhaps it's a different matter. I certainly be able to say I don't know. Goodness knows there's all sorts of things going on in the City of Milwaukee government that I don't know about, maybe I don't want to know about, but I'll do my very best to find out what the city's policy is or what the city's procedure is, and we can talk privately or contact me at my office afterwards. I'd like this to be more of a conversation than a presentation, so again, if you have comments or questions, by all means, please speak up. Do we have a microphone for that purpose, or do you...
Okay, if they talk to us, okay.
So, a couple of the areas that I thought we could touch on, the obvious, perhaps the greatest area of interest and concern, of course, is property taxes, and I'll get to those in a minute. There are, of course, other charges that the City of Milwaukee levies and accordingly attempts to collect through the bankruptcy process or otherwise, and so my effort was to highlight some of those, discuss some of those, and see what your questions might be. And of course, one of those areas is the charges commonly known as water charges in the City of Milwaukee. It's much broader than just the charge for the municipal water service. There are any number of other charges that appear on that bill. Sewer charges, solid waste disposal charges, snowplow charges, etc. In Milwaukee, those are billed quarterly. So what the property owner will get, and the bill comes to the property, is a bill that reflects 90 days worth of charges. There is, under Wisconsin law, a statute that provides that these charges are a lien against the property. The law at this point seems really quite settled that when those charges are billed initially, that lien is not perfected. I've offered a citation to the U.S. Leather case, which from, what is that, 2001, and that appears to be the authority such that for purposes of a bankruptcy, until those charges are certified to the tax roll and actually become part of the real estate tax bill, those are considered unsecured. And we in the city don't necessarily like that result, but that, as I say, appears to be the weight of authority, and we are conducting ourselves accordingly. In that regard, an issue has arisen, and continues to arise, I suspect, with respect to post-petition delinquencies. Recognizing that when billed, you have an unperfected, perhaps arguably secured by a lien, but unperfected, and so treated as unsecured. We have taken the position over the last couple of years that in the case of a post-petition delinquency, we will seek leave of the bankruptcy court for relief from the stay to go through the statutory process which permits those charges to be added to the tax bill. In a decision, a memorandum decision that was authored by Judge Kelly, and I have the citation in my materials, that concept, namely that the city needs to take another step to perfect its lien on these water charges, is necessary, and accordingly that would ordinarily be barred by the automatic stay in the case of a bankruptcy. We have sought that leave, and were granted was granted that right to do so. Judge Kelly and the other judges concluding that in the case of a post-petition delinquency, that the a bar is relatively low for a creditor such as the City of Milwaukee to be able to have the right to take that step to perfect the charges as a fully secured lien on a post-petition basis. And I have every reason to believe that the city will continue to take that approach and seek those rights. The statute for that covers this right to attach or to perfect the lien for water charges really is a one-time only opportunity. That this statute goes into rather a significant detail about what has to happen on October the 1st and October the 15th. It's once a year that the water department gets to certify delinquent charges to go through the comptroller's office to then end up in the treasurer's office and added to the tax bill. So if the city misses its window on or about November the 15th, then that right doesn't present itself again until the following year, and that really is a function of how the timeline works in the state of Wisconsin for the preparation and the levying of real estate taxes. I'll get into much more detail on that in just a minute or so. There are other charges, as I talked about, beyond those that appear on your quarterly, officially it's called a municipal services bill. Most people still refer to it as the water bill. Another example of those charges would be a building code or some sort of penalties that might be associated with a non-compliance of zoning or building or some other actions. I mention that. I'm sure everybody here in this room is aware of the different treatment for discharge purposes that some of these kinds of municipal fines or penalties or levies have in Chapter 7 versus Chapter 13. And we found in the last year or so that distinction wasn't always being observed by everybody throughout the city of Milwaukee. That is to say that the discharge in a Chapter 13, of course, is considerably broader than the discharge that's available in a Chapter 7. One of the differences is the treatment of municipal fines and assessments. We didn't do a good job of distinguishing between Chapter 7 and Chapter 13. I hope we've fixed that problem, but if anybody in this room encounters that problem, and frankly it was encountered in the context of Chapter 13's, I ask you to please let me know. The people who administer those things should be aware now of the distinction between the Chapter 7 discharge and the Chapter 13 discharge and act accordingly. But if there's a misunderstanding, please let me know, and we'll see if we can take care of that then.
Kevin, I have a question on those fines. We hear about them a lot. If the problem is corrected that created the issue, are those fines abated, or how does that work? If they've got a problem in a property, it needs paint, or it needs roof repairs, or it needs window repairs or something, and they go out and fix that, do those penalties go away, or do they still have to pay those?
I'm sorry. If the physical problem, the paint or the gutter or whatever it is,
right,
once that's fixed,
right,
does that make the fine or the penalty go away?
Right.
The answer is no, it does not.
Okay.
That is assessed for a period of non-compliance, and the city, when it discovers that there is a non-compliant building, will typically schedule reinspections on a regular basis. I think it depends upon what the nature of the violation is, but every 30 days, every 60 days, every 90 days, there would be a reinspection. If the compliance hasn't been properly abated or repaired, there'll be additional charges pursuant to those reinspections for the additional period of time in which the property remains out of compliance. So if it is fixed, there won't be any further charges assessed, but the ones that were assessed for the past non-compliance do in fact remain outstanding and payable.
But they're civil, right? They're not criminal.
They are not criminal. If they're coming from the city of Milwaukee, those are civil forfeitures. So those are not criminal.
And they can be dealt with in a plan.
And they can be dealt with in a Chapter 13 plan. That's, of course, the distinction, Judge, between a 7 and a 13. If it's coming from the city of Milwaukee, it's a civil matter. It's not going to be considered a criminal matter.
Well, then, is it discharged in the 7?
Our position is typically that those would not be discharged in a Chapter 7. I'm talking about the usual, you know, building code violations, for example, that in Chapter 7, those items for an exception to discharge. Those items are an exception to discharge, even if a purely civil matter.
Same with parking tickets?
Same with parking tickets.
I think that's the source of a lot of confusion for a lot of lawyers. You know, the distinction between civil and criminal and when they're dischargeable and when they're not.
And as I've indicated, that level of confusion perhaps is extended to certain officials within city government as well.
Okay.
Well, as I say, if you see a problem, call me, and I've taken care of it before, and if we need to take care of it again, we'll do so.
Taking care of parking tickets?
Yeah. Oh,
no,
some of the lawyers here were asking about the parking tickets.
Mr. King.
Mr. Kevin, when you talked to Kohler, so I think some of the lawyers were left with the wrong impression. You talked about perfection in municipal services bills, but can you tell us a little bit about the city's position on when real estate taxes, personal property taxes, and special assessments are perfected?
I can speak to real estate taxes. I don't know that I can speak to the other categories, Tom. With respect to real estate taxes, those are perfected when levied as per the statute. I'm sorry, I don't have a citation. It's probably in Chapter 74 of the Wisconsin statutes. So our position with respect to real property taxes is that nothing needs to be done to perfect those property taxes.
And it's in a separate statute than your municipal services bill, and becomes a lien on the first of the year and gets properly perfected and relates back to the beginning when carried to the tax roll in November under the statute as written.
Under the statute, it's automatically perfected as of January 1st. It comes back, relates back, excuse me. There's no step that needs to be taken. There's no action that needs to be done. There's no processing that needs to occur. There's no filing that needs to be made. And for that reason, as far as my understanding is, those are perfected immediately and become a fully perfected and secured lien against the property as soon as those are levied. I am not familiar, I'm sorry, with personal property taxes. So I don't even want to hazard a guess as to what, if any, differences there are between real property taxes and personal property taxes. And if you know, if you've looked into it, by all means, share with us. I don't know. I'm sorry.
I don't have the statutory reference, but I think the scheme is the same as real property. But the difference is, of course, personal property moves around and sometimes gets surrendered to the lender.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, lawyers should understand the lien, when it's properly there, follows the property.
It does follow the property.
And sometimes you have to
deal
with
the
lender. And from my experience with special assessments, once they're properly levied, they're perfected as well.
I would think special assessments would be treated the same in the same fashion.
But are they personal liability? A personal liability, say there's a personal property tax on a piece of equipment, it gets surrendered to the lender. Is it still the personal liability of the individual, so it becomes a claim in the Chapter 13 or whatever, or does it just follow the property? This is called stump the speaker.
I'm hoping I get further along before I got stumped, but
I like to play stump the speaker.
I know you do, and you do it very well.
Spoiling off outline.
Special assessments, once those are part of the tax bill, the personal liability would continue to attach there. You're speaking of the fact that for real estate taxes, there not only is the liability associated with the property, but there is there's also a personal liability associated with the owner of the property. And in fact, that is part of our customary approach to collection of the tax liability. Namely, we'll make an effort, we do so through the auspices of the Cohen Law Firm as our collection agent, but we'll make an effort to collect personally against a property owner, before getting to the ultimate remedy, which is a tax foreclosure. And I'm sorry, I don't know what the rules are associated with personal property. Obviously, as you suggest, to the extent there's personal liability, there's the ability to make a claim against an individual debtor in the context of a bankruptcy proceeding.
And is it your custom to go ahead and file that claim?
I believe that that's what we do, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Under that old equitable maxim, nothing is certain but death and taxes, I would say those personal property taxes are a claim.
I'm not here to tell you they're not.
Well, the real estate taxes are too, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so after, say, there's a foreclosure, the property is gone, but the property owner who was the owner when the taxes were assessed or levied becomes a claim in that person's bankruptcy estate, really?
No. In the case of a tax foreclosure, the tax foreclosure judgment, which has the effect of transferring title to the property, does so in satisfaction of the obligation. So,
what about a regular foreclosure by the lender?
A regular foreclosure, a mortgage foreclosure by a lender, will have no impact on the real estate taxes that are outstanding, either with respect to the in rem liability or the in personam liability.
Okay, so even if the debtor, say, lost the house, a house to foreclosure before the filing, that homeowner would still be liable on the real estate taxes, and you could file a claim in the bankruptcy.
Theoretically, that's right. Once the mortgage foreclosure has been completed, the sheriff's sale has been held, the sale's been confirmed, the sheriff's deed has been recorded, that would cut off the liability. But up until then, it's certainly our position that the property owner remains liable, and that would be an obligation of that individual or entity that had owned the real estate prior to the mortgage foreclosure.
Do you typically file proofs of claim in those?
They get paid in the foreclosures for those, don't they?
By the lender, by the buyer.
They're the senior lien.
Eventually, they are, although we've certainly seen more and more instances where the lender doesn't complete the mortgage foreclosure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
I believe that the customary practice under those circumstances, Judge, would be that the city would attempt to collect via a claim. In a situation where there had been a transfer of title from John Smith to a big bank mortgage company, somebody might well conclude that we're not going to bother with John Smith. Our target is going to be big bank mortgage company, because big bank mortgage company, if it takes title to the property, takes title subject to whatever outstanding real estate obligations are associated with that. So that might be an exception to that, but I'm not aware that we, as a routine basis, would simply ignore or wipe out a prior tax liability solely on account of a mortgage foreclosure.
What if the property is sold to Vulture LLC?
We have some of them in the city of Milwaukee, don't we?
I think so. If you look in the paper, you'll see lots of properties going for $5,000, whatever. And I bet there are more property taxes on them than the $5,000. I know Vulture buys it subject to the property taxes, but are you going to go after Vulture? You're going to go after the prior owner?
We certainly would go after, in your example, the new owner, Vulture Real Estate LLC.
They don't own anything but the property. And yes, they take it subject. But I guess the question is, are you going to file a proof of claim, because you got $20,000 worth of taxes due? Vulture bought it for $5,000 from big bank, maybe, or somebody.
Well, again, in that case, if the chain of title reflects that big bank mortgage was in there.
Well, they foreclosed, but they just didn't buy.
Well, if your example is that at the sheriff's sale, a big bank mortgage didn't bid, or bid but was outbid by this third-party entity which set up a single asset LLC, mm-hmm. then you're right. The mortgage company is not in the chain of title, and so we don't have a basis for proceeding against the lender.
I'm thinking of the debtor. Going to file a proof of claim in the debtor's chapter 13?
I'm saying I believe that we do.
Well, I'm wondering as a practical matter, whether you can legally, whether you'll get an objection from the trustee or from the debtor's attorney or whoever, if you have a legal right to do it, as a practical matter, does your office do it? Or do you take it on a case-by-case basis?
Honestly, Judge, that decision isn't made in our office. That decision is made in the treasurer's office. Clearly, we do have a legal right to seek that claim. My understanding is, in the fact situation you posit, that if we learned there was a Chapter 13, sure, we should be filing a proof of claim and would file a proof of claim to obtain payment to whatever extent that it might be available from the Chapter 13 debtor. For the benefit of anybody who doesn't know exactly how the process works for a collection of real estate taxes, you probably do know that your tax bill arrives in the first week of December. The governmental budget process grinds along throughout the fall, and your tax bill has 6 or 7 or 8 different line items on it. The city is perhaps the largest. The county is there. The public school district here, it's MATC, and there are a few others as well. When all that gets assembled, that's when the tax bills are prepared. Tax bill goes out on or about the beginning of December of each year, and the tax bill is due the following January 31st. In the city of Milwaukee, as a city of the first class, that real estate tax bill can be paid in installments over a 10-month period. First payment needs to be made on or before January 31st, and if you do that, then you can spread the remaining tax payments out over the following 9 months. For other jurisdictions, it's a smaller number of installments that are available. But you have to make that first payment. Now, I believe the statute gives a grace for one miss. If you make one miss, you can still keep with the installment if you catch up and don't miss a second time. If you pay in installments, then there's no interest or penalty which accrues. Otherwise, if you miss the January 31 date, or in a later point fall behind with respect to the installment payment, then the statute provides for a 1% per month interest charge plus a 0.5% per month penalty charge. So in effect, you're paying 18% per annum on delinquent real estate taxes. Now, in a bankruptcy, we don't collect the penalty, but we believe we're entitled to the statutory interest that is provided, and would collect that. Now, the statute does permit a tax foreclosure after only 12 months of delinquency. So for your bill that is due on January 31st, if The following January 31st, there are taxes for that year that are still unpaid. The statute would permit a commencement of a tax foreclosure. In the city of Milwaukee, the practice is, after that 1 year, to first seek to collect those debts via the in personam route, and that's where the Cohen Law Firm activity comes in. So at some time subsequent to the 1 year anniversary of the delinquency, it's now January 31st plus 1 year, the city will make a referral to the Cohen Law Firm for them to make an investigation and make an effort to collect the tax liability on a personal liability basis. And typically for the next year, the city will really sit back and await the process for collection via personal liability. To the extent that delinquency remains on the second anniversary, so now it's January 31, 2 years after the due date, at that point, unless the obligation is actively being paid by the property owner and collected, at that point the matter would get referred back to the city of Milwaukee, and we begin the process of proceeding pursuant to the tax foreclosure statute. I think most, if not many of you know that for a property that's located within the city of Milwaukee, it's the city which proceeds to enforce the tax foreclosure rights. Elsewhere, it's done on a county level, and in Milwaukee County, for property which is located outside of the municipal boundaries of the city of Milwaukee, that is to say, in the suburbs, since I don't believe there's any unincorporated land in Milwaukee County, that also is done at the county level. But within the municipal borders of the city of Milwaukee, that is handled by the city of Milwaukee. For the past number of years, I've been involved in this aspect of work for, this is the third year now. The city finds itself with at least 1,000 parcels of property that are delinquent and subject to tax foreclosure. This is a proceeding in state court. The city utilizes 75.521 Wisconsin statutes. It's an in rem tax foreclosure proceeding, meaning that we've already tried to collect personally. We either didn't get anything or didn't get it all in any event, so there's still a tax obligation. The tax foreclosure is an in rem proceeding. The property owner is not a party. The property owner is notified. The statute sets forth that the owner gets a certified mail notice. The mortgage holder is entitled to receive that notice as well. And those parties have an opportunity to redeem during the tax foreclosure process. From the time the action is filed in the circuit court to judgment, typically that's 120 days, maybe a little bit less, but there are statutory redemption periods, and the property owner has the right to redeem during that period. We have found that if the matter has gone all the way to tax foreclosure, it is unusual for the property owner to then come in and redeem. The redemptions typically are mortgage holders at that point. And I would say roughly a third of the pieces of property that are subject to being filed for tax foreclosure are redeemed. So two-thirds are not, which would indicate to you that somewhere in the neighborhood of 600, maybe 700 pieces of property every year are going to tax foreclosure judgment in the city of Milwaukee. And when that judgment is rendered, the judgment has the effect of a transfer of title to the property. We do these in batches. This, quite unfortunately, is a volume business. Last year, there were three separate proceedings. The intention this year is to also do three separate proceedings. So it'd be anywhere from 300 to 400 pieces of property in each one. And when judgment is rendered, there's a judgment that transfers whatever the number of pieces of property to the city of Milwaukee. We record that judgment at the Register of Deeds, and that completes a conveyance. Now, what happens after that tax foreclosure judgment? Well, let me back up a second. Obviously, if there is a bankruptcy filing prior to the entry of the judgment, that stops the process. And obviously a fair number of those of that kind of occurrence happens. You can send the notice of a bankruptcy to my office. You can send it to the treasurer's office. The treasurer is really the manager of this process. Either way, if we learn about the filing of a bankruptcy petition, we'll take that property out of the tax foreclosure. It happens almost every time that for whatever reason we didn't receive notice, or we received notice but it didn't end up in the hands of the right person at the right time. If that happens again, you can contact me, and if you send me a copy of the bankruptcy filing, and we can see that it was that it was filed prior to the judgment, we'll vacate that judgment and put the property back in the hands of your client, the debtor. This isn't bankruptcy, but there is a mechanism under the Milwaukee ordinances to afford a foreclosed property owner the opportunity to petition the Common Council and redeem post-judgment. That is it's not a right, because it's a petition, it's not automatic, but you do have the right to file a petition, but you must do so within 90 days of entry of the judgment. So at the 91st day following entry of the judgment, that avenue is no longer available. Many of you are aware that there's litigation that's currently pending in the nature of an action to avoid tax foreclosure judgment in the case of a bankruptcy that was filed post-judgment on the grounds of that transfer was a fraudulent transfer under Section 548 on the basis of not receiving reasonably equivalent value. I mentioned before that in a tax foreclosure, the property is transferred from property owner to city and is done so in satisfaction of the outstanding tax obligation. And the argument is that to the extent that the amount of the tax obligation due is less than the value of the property, that you have a fraudulent transfer. That litigation remains ongoing. I've got a citation to the initial decision that was rendered by Judge Pepper. city took it up on appeal. Judge Clavert, in the last month, roughly, I believe, remanded back to the bankruptcy court. Officially, it was a vacation of the judgment in favor of the debtor. One of the lawyers involved is right here, and you can ask Todd what he thinks about it. I can tell you that there weren't a lot of comforting words from the city's perspective in Judge Clavert's decision remanding it back, but it is ongoing litigation, and that at this point is not settled. I'm not obviously suggesting that that is a remedy that I'm encouraging anyone to utilize. It's the law, and the authority within this jurisdiction is there. The city continues to study what the best approach is for us, not just from the perspective of what's the best way to handle property X or debtor Y, but what's the best from the standpoint of our overall tax collection strategy. What's the best from the standpoint of most efficiently utilizing resources that are available to provide for the orderly collection of the outstanding tax obligations?
What does the city do with the property once, assuming there's no bankruptcy or challenge to the tax foreclosure? I heard that if with these lender walkaways and if the property's been abandoned, and if it goes a year without, you know, pipes being on and being maintained, it becomes uninhabitable. You have to
raise it.
Yeah, and is that right, or is that just a nasty rumor?
I wish it were a nasty rumor. My understanding is that there are some number of hundreds of pieces of property in the city of Milwaukee that are on the list of properties that are in such a deteriorated condition that those properties need to be raised, that they can't be rehabbed, no longer fit for human use or habitation. And
is the city trying to find buyers, though? Have you got a division that's trying to market these properties that the city owns?
Yes, Judge. The Department of City Development has been charged with the responsibility of managing and marketing the tax foreclosed property. They tell me they've had some success. I don't know what sort of premium they're offering to get people to buy these properties, which even the best ones are probably not in tip-top condition. But it's DCD's responsibility to manage. If, for example, there are, this is rental property where there are tenants, it would be their DCD's responsibility to identify the tenants and make arrangements to collect, whatever rent is being generated, and ultimately to market them. That was an easy job 6 years ago. Obviously, it's not an easy job today. Excuse me. And to the extent those are being marketed and sold, the price in particular, you know, factoring in the carrying costs and the amount of time which these properties are sitting and must be maintained. This is not a moneymaker. If I had somebody from DCD sitting next to me, they'd say, stop foreclosing on these properties. We have way more than we know what to do with now. let us work off the inventory. Why does the city continue to do that? Well, that gets into something of a philosophical discussion related to the concept of uniformity of taxation. And there are some people who feel very strongly that if the city forecloses against Judge McGarity's property, they have no choice but to foreclose against Judge Kelly's property when she goes delinquent. And there's the two must be treated.
I live in Waukesha, so forget it. You can't.
You're beyond my reach.
That's right.
I live in the city of Milwaukee.
I thought
I'm
you
in
did.
Trouble.
but you obviously pay your taxes because your name has never appeared on the list. But that's the reason, is it comes back to the concept of uniform treatment, uniform practice. And so whether foreclosing on, you know, 123 First Street really makes sense from a macro viewpoint, at least the current thinking is it does, and so we continue to do so.
Well, if you don't, people will stop paying.
That news would spread relatively quickly.
I think so, yeah.
Is there any effort or talk about changing the system? Like in Illinois, my understanding is rather than the redemption that you described, which is only available to the debtor, the owner of the property, and maybe a mortgage creditor, they let third parties come in and, quote, buy the taxes. So then you have, like, investors and, you know, is there any thought of or talk about possibly changing the system? Wouldn't that make more sense from the city's standpoint than what we've got now?
That remedy is very much varies on a state-to-state basis, sometimes quite dramatically. And Illinois' process, for example, is quite different than the Wisconsin process. The city of Milwaukee has elected to proceed under 75-521, the in rem statute, more or less since that statute was adopted in the late 40s. The reason that statute was adopted was to simplify and streamline the process. Still on the books is a tax foreclosure process that very closely mirrors the mortgage foreclosure process, such that at the end there's a sale. In the 75-521 process that I've outlined, there's not a sale, and you know that's certainly one of the issues in the fraudulent transfer litigation that is ongoing. Our thinking now, and nearly as I can tell, the thinking for the last 60 years has been, given the volume in an urban area, the in rem process is a much more efficient way to address the problem than having what in effect is a one-by-one foreclosure with a sale for each piece of property. And so in the current situation, if in a year there are 700 pieces of property, you'd have to have a mechanism to have a sale of 700 different pieces, an auction, a bidding process for each one of those. There may be some advantages to that. In particular, in this kind of market, where you can certainly make the argument the city would be better off if somebody came along, Judge McGarity's Vulture LLC, and paid a few thousand dollars to take it off the city's hands, as opposed to having that property fall into the hands of the city and be and the city being responsible to manage and maintain and ultimately sell. To the extent conditions were much different in the real estate market as recently as 6 or 7 years ago, the city was able to very quickly from my understanding, turn around these properties that were the subject of a tax foreclosure and not incur a great liability. Obviously, since the real estate market collapsed in 07 or 08, whatever it was, that is no longer the case. I'm not aware of any effort to change the law to add some, if it's possible, Judge, to have some sort of a hybrid process that allowed the municipality to foreclose en masse as we do now, yet retain an ability to have a sheriff-style sale or a bidding option to allow more readily these so-called real estate investors to come in and take that property.
Maybe they're all bankrupt anyway, from what I can tell. Are there any more questions for Kevin? Thank you so much. That was great.
Judge, thank you. Thank you.
Come back next month for Judge Pepper and Trustee King on the Model National Chapter 13 plan. Thanks again, everybody.
Thank you.
That'll be exciting. Mm-hmm. So.